It's 8:15. Midweek Theatre.
We continue our celebration of the birth of G.K. Chesterton 100 years ago with another Father Brown story, adapted for radio by Archie Campbell. With Leslie French as Father Brown and William Ruston as G.K. Chesterton himself, who narrates the stories. Our story today is called The Queer Feet.
If you, my dear listener, meet a member of that select club, the 12 True Fishermen, entering the Vernon Hotel for the annual club dinner, you will observe that his evening coat is green and not black. If, supposing you have the audacity to address such an exalted being, you ask him why, he will probably answer that he does so in order to avoid being taken for a waiter. You will then retire crushed. If, to pursue the same vein of improbable conjecture, you were to meet my mild and hard-working little friend Father Brown, and were to ask him what he regarded as the most singular luck of his life, he would probably reply that upon the whole his best stroke was at that oligarchical institution, the Vernon Hotel, where he had averted a crime and perhaps saved a soul merely by listening to a few footsteps in a passage. As it is unlikely that you will ever rise high enough in the social world to find the 12 True Fishermen, or that you will sink low enough among slums and criminals to find Father Brown, I fear you will never hear the story at all, unless you hear it from me. You may wonder how so ordinary a person as Father Brown came to find himself in such a place as the Vernon Hotel. The explanation is simple. On the afternoon of the club dinner, one of the waiters, an Italian, had been struck down with a paralytic stroke, and his employer, Mr. Levan, who, despite his dislike of difficulties, was a not unkindly man, had consented to send for the nearest Popish priest. Obeying the summons as speedily as his short legs and a penny omnibus could carry him, Father Brown reached the square in Belgravia, where at a corner, and almost as if by accident, the Vernon Hotel discreetly stood. With no sign of trepidation, he mounted the steps of that old-fashioned yet eminently distinguished establishment, and was greeted on the threshold by a gentleman of equally distinguished but slightly more flamboyant appearance.
Good afternoon. I am Mr. Lever, the proprietor. Can I assist you?
If you would be so kind. My name is Brown, Father Brown. I believe my presence has been requested. Some poor soul seeking the last...
Yes, to be sure. Luigi, poor fellow. Most unfortunate. And on this night of all nights, to lose one of my best waiters, most unfortunate.
Unfortunate, certainly, but surely...
We pride ourselves on the perfection of the service we provide, particularly on such an occasion as tonight.
Tonight?
Yes, indeed. The annual dinner of the Club of the 12 True Fishermen, a most exclusive affair.
Oh, no doubt, but might I trouble you
to... Mr. Audley, the Club's president is fastidious in the matter of service, as indeed is the young Duke of Chester, his second in command. Most unfortunate.
You have my sympathy, sir, but might I trespass on your kindness?
As you see, we are not a large hotel. Large, that is, in the usual sense of the word. But the club would never consent to dine anywhere else. Privacy. Absolute privacy is the keynote of the whole gathering.
No, quite, quite. But if you would be so good as...
Normally, you see, we have a dining room staff of 15. That is, one waiter to each of our 12 guests. Together, of course, with my maître d'hôtel, my sommelier, and the man who's charged with the care of the silver. 15 in all. Oh,
that number would appear ample. But
silver, did I say? I should more properly have referred to it as regalia. You may perhaps have read of the celebrated set of fish knives and forks, for example, which are, as it were, the insignia of the society. Each one being exquisitely wrought in silver in the form of a fish, and each one loaded at the hilt with one large pearl. A unique and well-nigh priceless collection you will gather, and one which invariably adorns the table on these occasions. Excuse me. Yes, what is it, William? Yes, the strong room key, to be sure. I will see to the silver myself, William, since tonight we are somewhat hard-pressed.
All this is most interesting, but I really do think
I should... Of course, of course. I was forgetting the call that brought you here. William.
Sir.
William, this reverend gentleman is here to bring comfort and solace to Luigi in the hour of his affliction. Pray, conduct him to the poor fellow's chamber.
Certainly, Mr. Lever. Would you kindly follow me, sir? This way.
It is not for us to surmise what the waiter Luigi confessed to Father Brown, but apparently it involved him in writing out a note or statement for the conveying of some message or the righting of some wrong. Descending from the servants' quarters, Father Brown discovered the hotel proprietor waiting for him in the hall.
And how did you find the poor fellow?
In extremis, I fear. But I trust much comforted in spirit. The doctor is with him now.
He could not be in better hands. And Dr. Richardson is an excellent physician. I am most grateful to you, Father Brown, for your kind offices.
Do not thank me, please. Such ministrations are all part of our vocation.
Of course, of course.
I hesitate to trouble you, sir, but would it be possible to provide me with a room and writing materials?
A room? A room in which to write. Dear me, that does present a problem. You see, we have no such place in the hotel. Our few resident guests go at once to their own private apartments and only descend for meals. Besides, our 12 crew fishermen would be startled to find a new face in the hotel on the night of their dinner. A mere glimpse of such a person might precipitate a crisis in the club.
Well, I do not wish to put you to inconvenience, Mr. Lever, but it is imperative that I make out a statement while my memory is still fresh.
I see. Yes, yes. Well, there is, of course, the receptionist's office, which you observe abuts onto this vestibule, but that would hardly be suitable. Nor, indeed, would the gentleman's cloakroom just beyond it. Yes, yes, difficult, most difficult. Wait a moment. I have an idea. Yes. Would you follow me, please? This way along the passage, please. Please, come in. This is a small sanctum of which I occasionally make use when interviewing clients on matters of delicacy and so forth. It is at your disposal for the next 30 minutes or so.
Oh, thank you. This would be admirable for my purpose.
You will find a pen, ink, and paper on the table.
Excellent.
As you see, this room leads on the one side to the office and on the other to the rear of the cloakroom. You will be quite undisturbed here, but to ensure your privacy, I shall lock the door behind me when I go. Now, if you'll excuse me, I shall take my leave. I fancy the first of tonight's guests are already assembling.
Dear me, the room seems strangely dark. However, there should be enough light from this glass partition to enable me to complete my task. Now, what have we here? Ah, yes. Pen, paper, and an inkpot, as he said. Well, then, to work. Final depositions and wishes of Luigi Castiglione, waiter, age 47, to be carried out in the event of his death.
Ah, Gordon, my dear fellow. Very pleasant to have you with us once again. Not seen you since Goodwood, I fancy.
No, my dear. After a week sailing at Cowes, I went up north.
In time for the 12th, I take it.
Naturally. At least one of old McGurkett's moors for the season.
Birds plentiful this year?
Never better. Strong on the wing, too.
Splendid work. Ah, Duke. Ah. You've not forgotten us, then?
Oh, rather not. Wouldn't miss one of our club dinners for all the world. I came along from the house, as a matter of fact.
Good, sir.
I would have been here earlier at the PM. Hadn't buttoned on me just as I was leaving.
Yes, the trouble with you radicals, thick as thieves and stick together like limpets. Still, better late than never. What do you say, Audley?
Yes, well, our little gathering would hardly be complete without our vice president. I'm glad to see you, Algy, my boy.
Yeah, how do you do, sir?
How's your dear mother? Keeping well, I trust?
Pretty well, thank you, sir. In Yorkshire at the moment. Taking the waters at Harrogate, don't you know?
Oh, they can prove most beneficial, I'm told.
Oh, nothing like them, Audley. Did my liver a power are of good. Mm. You should try them yourself one of these days.
Yes, no doubt, no doubt. But as you know, I seldom move from London.
Yeah, gone to earth in your rooms in Albany, eh, old boy? You bachelors certainly know what's good for you.
Yes, well, I dare say you're right. However, I have a notion the flesh pots are awaiting us. Shall we adjourn to the terrace if you're ready, gentlemen?
Yes.
Yeah, you lead the way, young Algie.
Hey, after you, sir.
All right, age before beauty.
Archie with a quarter. Get this winsome colonel.
Of course I am. What do you think?
Finally, I wish to thank all my friends and colleagues in the Vernon Hotel who have helped to make my years in London such happy ones. Well, that seems about all. I don't think there's any more to add. Well, so much the better. It's really getting too dark in here to write. Well, what's the time, I wonder? How quiet the place is. One could hear a pin drop. Yeah, the hour for dinner must be drawing on. Can that chap Lever have forgotten me? Ah, perhaps this is him now. No, one of the waiters, probably. Seems in a hurry, too. Well, what am I supposed to do, ring a bell? I don't see one. Well, I can't stay locked in here all night. Curious. Now, why should those footsteps be so regularly irregular? Boom, 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 boom. Always the same rhythm. Oh, that's odd. That's distinctly odd. Bon, 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 bon. Precisely the same routine. Always the change of step as he passes the door. Bon, 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 bon. I can't make it out. It's a mystery to me. It's a perfect mystery. There they are again. Obviously, that's the same pair of feet, the same pair of boots. I can't understand it. I simply can't understand it. I've seen men run in order to jump. I've seen men run in order to slide, but why on earth should a man run in order to walk? Boom. 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 Boom, 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 boom. Or again, why should he walk in order to run? Ah, the man, whoever he is either walking very fast down one half of the corridor in order to walk very slow down the other half, or he's walking very slow at one end to have the rapture of walking fast at the other. There it is again. What the devil is the fellow up to? Is it perhaps some kind of religious dance? Or could it be some new kind of scientific exercise? I wonder. If it's not a waiter, who could it be? That's certainly not the step of the proprietor. Men of his type usually walk with a rapid waddle, more like this. Room, ba, room, ba, room, ba. It's not exactly the gait of a well-trained waiter. When they move rapidly, they also move silently, particularly in an exclusive establishment like the Vernon Hotel. Supposing, however, it is a waiter, why only one pair of feet? Where are his fellows? If this corridor leads, as it may well do, to the servants' quarters, why are not others also passing to and fro? Or does our friend enjoy the unique privilege of being allowed to use this passage as a shortcut to the kitchen? It's puzzling. Decidedly puzzling.
Attention, grand jeune homme. Tu ne veux pas ta brûlée, eh?
Ah, sacré bleu!
Vite, Jean, passe-moi la négresse.
Oui, monsieur Claude.
Et la spatule en même temps, dépêche-toi.
Oui, monsieur Claude. Et voici.
Non, idiot, la spatule en bois. Vite, 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 vite.
Je m'excuse, monsieur Claude. Voici la spatule.
Enfin! Ça va mieux, saucier?
Oui, chef.
La sauce mornée, est-elle prête?
Bien sûr, chef. Elle est déjà faite. Voyez.
Permettez-moi. Pas mal, mais encore un petit peu du fromage, pensez-vous. Un soupçon, sais-tu?
D'accord, chef. Je le ferai tout de suite.
Alors, maître d'hôtel, vous êtes revenu, tout va bien sur la terrasse, les pêcheurs, fishermen, ils sont bien contents, et they are happy.
Very happy, the dinner's going splendidly.
Les hors d'oeuvre, they were enjoying.
With rapture, monsieur Claude, his grace consumed his portion with a special zest.
And the consommé madrilène, did it also please our guests?
Enormously. Mr. Audley made a point of offering his congratulations to the chef. He had never tasted anything so good, he said.
Ah, that is true. Yes, indeed, that gentleman is a gourmet, un vrai connaisseur. Ah! Attention, imbécile! Veux-tu renverser le bain-marie? Attention, je te dis, ce pot-là est chaud, alors?
Bien entendu, monsieur Claude.
Oh, tout à l'heure! Qu'est-ce que tu as fait, mon Dieu? Mon Dieu, je n'ai jamais rencontré un tigre plus bête que toi, jamais! Va-t'en! Fiche-moi la paix.
Clear out.
As you, being an attentive listener, will already have gathered, the Vernon was, and still is, a small and somewhat inconvenient hotel. However, one inconvenience in particular was held to be of vital importance to the Club of the 12 True Fishermen. The fact that only 24 people could dine in the place at once. The only big dinner table, the celebrated terrace table, which overlooked one of the most exquisite old gardens in London, provided seats for exactly that number. Since the members of the club numbered only 12, they could thus occupy the terrace in the most luxurious style of all, being ranged along the inner side of the table with no one opposite, commanding an uninterrupted view of the garden, its flower beds and shrubberies still discernible in the fading light. The first two courses of the dinner, served smoothly and silently by a small army of soft-footed waiters, had proceeded with placid success. Now, amid the luster of fine silver and glass, with the famous pearl-studded knives and forks already set, and glowing in the light of the crimson-shaded candles, the 12 true men sat in blissful expectation of the next, the most important, well-nigh sacred course, the traditional fish pie, that monstrous and fabulous edifice of culinary art created by the chef, Monsieur Claude, in person, and named by him in the curious French used only by cooks, le pudding suprême aux délices de la pêche.
No place like the Vernon, if you ask me.
I agree. Their wines and cooking couldn't be better anywhere in Europe. The Niersteiner, it's first rate.
Their bubbly will be even better, mark my words. Clicquot 1911. How about that? Ah, but you're right, Colonel. They can have their Ritzes and their Carltons. Give me the good old Vernon every time.
Certainly one could hardly hope to enjoy a more agreeable prospect.
That's true.
That garden, even in this light, the trees, the flowers, I doubt if anything like it exists in the whole of London.
Talking of flowers reminds me, poor Charlie Ilminster's just lost his head gardener in Hereford. Been with him for 20 years. Very cut up about it.
Must be.
He can't find a good head gardener for love or money these days.
So I imagine. I hear they've had to close two of their hothouses at Chatsworth. We simply can't find the chaps to look after them. All the youngsters are emigrating, it appears.
Oh, by the way, what's happened to young Abercrombie? He was a keen gardener at one time.
That's true.
Didn't you know? He's all post in Oslo at the moment. Been there about 6 months. Unpaid attaché, don't you know?
Yes, and taken up salmon fishing in a big way, it seems. Was that 45 pounds last week? Yes. Pleased as punch about it.
I'd always thought of Abercrombie as a dry fly while I'm hadn't he a beat on the test at one time?
Yes, indeed. Wild horses wouldn't drag him away from it.
Once a fisherman, always a fisherman, I say.
Which seems to sound an appropriate note for the arrival of tonight's pièce de résistance. Yes. Unless I'm mistaken, the famous fish pie is about to be presented for our delectation.
Excellent.
quite excellent.
Absolutely splendid.
They can't do this fish pie anywhere but here.
Nowhere assuredly, except here. It was represented to me that the...
Excuse me, sir.
Anglais... what? Oh, yes, my plate. Yes, clearly, by all means, I've quite...
Thank you, sir.
Yes, now, where was I? Oh, yes, of course, as I was saying, it was represented to me that the same sort of thing could be done at the Café Anglais. I accepted the challenge, unfortunately for me. Nothing like it.
No. Overrated place, Café Anglais. Thoroughly overrated, I always say.
No, I don't know, Colonel. It's only good for some things. Well, for instance, you can't be...
Excuse me, sir.
Oh, I say, that waiter Johnny seems in the devil of a hurry. I'd hardly lay down my knife and fork before he lifts me a plate from under my very eyes. Well, hang it all, a fellow expects to be allowed time to digest what he's eaten.
Yes.
I've a good mind to call him back. Hi, waiter. Oh, he seems to have disappeared. Oh, never mind. I say, this bubble is good, isn't it? Can't beat the widow, eh, Watson?
Oh, pardon my soul. Capital, vintage capital.
Real time to relish.
Service are always first rate, you know. Unobtrusive, that's what I like about it. Can't stand a lot of fellows fussing about.
No, indeed. No place like it. No place like the Vernon. You know, I recollect that some years ago, it was suggested to me by one of our members.
Bless my soul. What can have happened to that proprietor? I must have been locked in here for the best part of an hour. It's far too dark now to read or even write. That fellow again. I take my oath those steps never belonged to a waiter. They're clearly not levers. There's a swaggering confidence about them. A kind of careless emphasis, I suppose one might call it, that has nothing to do with the obsequious business of hotel keeping. No, those are the steps of a gentleman. A gentleman of Western Europe, and probably one who has never had to work for a living. Back they come. There's something familiar about that strange, swift walking. I've heard it before somewhere, I do declare. But where? In heaven's name, where? No, it's no good. I can't recall it. If only my memory were not quite so bad. No, I can't endure this uncertainty. Somehow or other, I must satisfy my curiosity. Locked, of course. How stupid of me. I've got it. The office next door. There's still a light shining through. Surely someone must be inside. A receptionist, or at least a deputy. No. No one there. I'll try the door. Locked too. Ah, well, nothing for it. Nothing for it but to possess myself in patience and await release. A prisoner in his cell. Oh, dear. What a situation. Oh, this time he really is in a hurry. But why the tearing excitement? What can have compelled such haste? They've stopped just along the passage. Now, why? The cloakroom, of course! He stopped there! Oh, what a fool I've been not to think of it. Leave a mention that this room led into it. Good. Oh, my word. Oh, it's dark in here. Dark as pitch. I can't see a thing. There must be another door somewhere. I'll try groping along this wall, and if... Oh, dear. Oh, what is it? Oh, only a common or garden umbrella, but it quite startled me. There we are. No damage done. Now, if I continue slowly along this wall, like this, I should. Oh, I beg your pardon, sir. I didn't see you. Oh, bless my soul, it's just an overcoat. Oh, dear. Oh, and another one. Oh, and another one. Whole cluster of overcoats. Ah, well, there's a glimmer of light over there. I must be getting near the door into the passage. Oh, where's the attendant, I wonder? I don't know where I'm going. I can't see a thing. Oh, there's not a step anywhere. Ah, that's better. Yes, I can see quite well now. I feel like a mole coming out of his hole.
There you are. I couldn't see you behind all those overcoats. I want my hat and coat, please. I find I have to go away at once. Here's my ticket.
Your ticket, sir?
Yes, my ticket, number 39. Be sharp about it, please. I'm in a hurry.
Oh, yes, of course, sir. I'll see to it at once. 39. Ah, here we are. I think these must be yours, sir.
Thank you, my man. I don't appear to have any silver on me, but never mind, you can keep this. Why are you staring at it? Haven't you seen a half sovereign before?
Yes, but...
I've told you I haven't any silver on me.
I think, sir, that you have some silver in your pocket all the same.
Hang it, if I give you gold, why should you complain?
Because silver is sometimes more valuable than gold. That is, in large quantities.
What the devil?
You're choking me. Oh, kindly release me at once.
Stand still. I don't want to threaten you, but...
But I do want to threaten you. I want to threaten you with the worm that dieth not, and the fire that is not quenched.
Huh. You're a rum sort of cloakroom attendant, I must say.
I am a priest, Monsieur Flambeau.
You know my name?
Certainly I know your name. I know more than your name, Monsieur Flambeau. And if you care to cast your mind back some months to a certain encounter on Hampstead Heath, terminating in the recovery of a valuable piece of church property, you may also remember mine.
Father Brown. You are Father Brown?
None other. And what is more, I am ready to hear your confession. Come now, Monsieur Flambeau. I am waiting.
Oh, mon Dieu. Mon Dieu.
In case you, dear listener, may have forgotten or indeed be unaware of the incident to which our friend referred, allow me to refresh your memory. On a previous occasion, Flambeau, that arch international criminal, had by the simple expedient of disguising himself as a fellow cleric, stolen from Father Brown a precious silver cross, which our little priest was conveying to an important Eucharistic conference. Happily, a clever ruse, amounting to a stroke of genius, enabled Father Brown not only to salve his stolen property, but to hand the miscreant over to the officers of the law. However, let us not dwell on that story, but return forthwith to the Vernon Hotel, where consternation reigns amongst the staff.
Wilhelm! Wilhelm! For Easthorpe!
I'm here, of course. What's the matter?
The fish plates, the silver knives and forks. You have seen them?
Well, certainly I've seen them. Didn't I serve the fish pie? They were all laid out on the table then.
On their table they no longer are.
What do you mean, no longer are? I thought you'd been ordered to clear them.
Yeah, so. Then to clear them from the table I go. The fish plates, also the knife and fork, they are already gone.
Gone? Gone? What are you talking about?
Come, see.
What's the hurry?
It's the fish service. Have you seen it?
No, why?
Heinrich here says it's been cleared.
Cleared already? But I thought they'd only just finished eating it.
Did I? Come on.
You see? Nothing there. All gone. Kaput.
What has gone?
The fish service, Louis. It's vanished. Disappeared.
Disparu. Le service de poisson. Il n'est pas là.
See for yourself.
Tiens. You are right. The table est complètement vide. Oh, nom de Dieu.
But who could have done it?
Now then, what's the trouble?
Oh, Maître D, thank heavens you've come. Look out there, if you please. The table.
Well?
The fish service. It's gone. Silver and all. Vanished into thin air.
Well, I'll be blowed. Did none of you clear the table?
No, Maître. We didn't have time.
They've not been taken to the pantry.
No, Maître. I've just come from there.
Or carried back to the kitchen.
No, no. The chef's waiting to serve the next course.
Well, this is serious. I must report the loss to Mr. Lever at once.
this time of year.
I say, isn't it about time they set up the grouse?
Yes, by Jove. There seems to be some sort of hitch in the proceedings.
Beats me. Never had to wait between courses so long before. Where the devil are those waiters? Waiter!
Waiter!
Waiter? Not a belly one in sight.
Yes. You know, it's splendid work young Muta's doing in Burma.
Yeah, really?
No other nation in the world could have... Ah, maitre d'hotel. Now, perhaps you can enlighten us.
Excuse me, sir, but it is most important. Might the proprietor speak to you?
Well, yes, I suppose so.
Mr. Audley, your grace. Gentlemen, you will pardon me, I hope, but I have great apprehensions. your fish plates, they are cleared away with a knife and fork on them?
Well, yes. I hope so.
you see him? You see the waiter who took them away? You know him?
Know the waiter? Certainly not.
That waiter, I never sent him. I know not when or why he come. I send my waiter to take away the plates, and he finds them already gone.
Do you mean that someone has stolen our silver?
I feel that is the case.
Stolen? Our silver fish service? I say, jolly bad show.
Tell me, are all your waiters here?
Yes, they're all here, Colonel. Notice them myself. Always count them as I come in. They look so queer standing up against the wall.
Yes, but surely one can't remember exactly.
I remember exactly, I tell you. There never have been more than 15 waiters at this place, and there were no more than 15 tonight. I'll swear, no more and no less.
You say, Your Grace, you say that you see all my 15 waiters?
As usual, yes. What's the matter with that?
Nothing, Your Grace. Only you did not.
Did not?
No. For one of them is dead upstairs.
Oh, I say. Is there anything we can do?
He has had a priest.
Ah.
If there was a 15th man here, then that 15th fellow was a thief. Now, we've no time to lose. Down at once to the front and back doors and secure everything. Then we'll talk. Those 24 pearls are worth recovering. Come, follow me, every man, Jack of you, and come down. Yes? Well, what is it, my man?
Excuse me, gentlemen. Mr. Lever, sir. I've just found the fish plates.
Found them? Where?
On his sideboard. There's a whole pile of them, but there's no silver there. Not a trace of it.
Well, we better divide our forces. You, Lever, take your lot to the front of the building.
Certainly, Colonel.
The rest of you, follow me. This way, down the corridor to the servants' quarters. All of you, follow me.
I say, hold on a second. Or perhaps this cloakroom chap, he'll know something about it. Hello? You in there? Have you seen anyone pass?
Perhaps I have got what you are looking for, gentlemen.
What the devil do you mean?
These.
The fish service. Our silver fish service.
You mean...
Valuable things to deposit in a cloakroom, are they not?
Did you steal those things?
Well, if I did, at least I'm bringing them back again.
But you didn't. Someone else had a hand in this.
To make a clean breast of it, I didn't.
But you know who did.
Yes, I know.
And I have a pretty good idea how he made his escape. Look, Colonel.
What?
That window there with the broken pane.
Ah, yes, the window. The unfortunate man left in something of a hurry.
You know his name?
I don't know his real name, but I know something of his fighting ways. And a great deal about his spiritual difficulties. I formed the physical estimate when he was trying to throttle me. And the moral estimate when he repented.
Repented? Oh, I say, how perfectly priceless.
It's odd, isn't it, that a thief should repent when so many who are rich and secure remain hard and frivolous and without fruit for God or man. There, if you will excuse me, you trespass a little upon my province.
Your province?
My province is a priest, sir.
Damn it all. Fellow's a parson. Should have noticed the dog collar, eh? May I ask, sir, what a priest is doing in charge of a cloakroom?
That is a longer story. But if any of you gentlemen doubt the penitence as a practical fact, there are your knives and forks. You are the 12 true fishers, and there are all your silver fish. But he has made me a fisher of men.
Did you catch this man?
Yes, I caught him. with an unseen hook and an invisible line which is long enough to let him wander to the ends of the world and still to bring him back with a twitch upon the thread.
Yes. Well, now, gentlemen, as we've been so fortunate in recovering our missing property, I suggest that we repair once again to the festive board. Yeah, right? Yeah, yeah, yeah. No doubt our excellent Mr. Lever will have things in hand in less than no time. Are you joining us, Colonel?
You go ahead. I'll be with you presently.
As you please. Come, gentlemen.
Do you know what I'm thinking, Your Reverence?
No, Colonel.
He must have been a clever fellow. And I think I know a cleverer.
He was a clever fellow, but I'm not quite sure of what other you mean.
I mean you, sir. I don't want to get the fellow jailed, make yourself easy about that, but I'd give a good many silver forks to know exactly how you fell into this affair and how you got the stuff out of him.
Well, I mustn't tell you anything of the man's identity or his own story, of course. But there's no particular reason why I shouldn't tell you of the mere facts which I found out for myself. You see, Colonel, I was shut up in that small room there doing some writing when I heard a pair of feet in this passage doing a dance that was as queer as the dance of death.
Good heavens.
First came quick, funny little steps like a man walking on tiptoe. And then came slow, careless steps, as of a big man walking about with a cigar. But they were both made by the same feet, I swear. And they came in rotation. First the run, then the walk. Then the walk, and the run again. Now why, I asked myself, should a man act these two parts at once? One walk I knew. It was just like yours, Colonel. It was the walk of a well-fed gentleman who strolls about rather because he is physically alert than because he is mentally impatient. Mm. And I knew that I knew the other walk, too. But I could not remember what it was. Then I heard a clink of plate somewhere, and the answer stood up as plain as St. Peter's. My travels have taken me to Rome, you see. It was the walk of a waiter. Then I thought for a minute and a half more, and I believe I saw the manner of the crime as clearly as if I were going to commit it. A crime is like any other work of art.
Work of art?
Don't look so surprised. Crimes are by no means the only works of art that come from the devil's workshop. But every work of art has one indispensable mark. The center of it is simple, however much the fulfillment may be complicated.
Yes, I'm not with you, I fear.
Well, you see, Colonel, the whole of this tale turns on a black coat. This subtle and, in the ordinary course, most profitable crime was built on the plain fact that a gentleman's evening dress is the same as a waiter's. All the rest was acting. Thundering good acting, too.
I'm still not sure that I understand.
This archangel of impudence who stole your forks walked up and down this passage 20 times in the blaze of all the lights, in the glare of all the eyes, and everywhere he went, he seemed to be there by right. Whenever he came among you gentlemen, he came in the lightning style of a waiter, with bent head, flapping table, napkin, and flying feet. He shot out onto the terrace. He did something to the tablecloth and shot back again towards the office and the waiter's quarters. By the time he had come under the eyes of the other waiters, he had become another man. He strolled among the servants with the absent-minded nonchalance which they have all seen in their patrons. Ha-ha! But his one bad moment came when all the waiters stood in a row. But even then he contrived to lean against the wall just around the corner in such a way that for that important instant the waiters thought him a gentleman, while the gentlemen thought him a waiter. The rest went like winking. If any waiter caught him away from the table, that waiter thought him a languid aristocrat. He had only to time himself 2 minutes before the fish was cleared, become a swift servant, and clear it himself. He put the plates down on a sideboard, he stuffed the silver in his breast pocket, and he ran like a hare till he came to the cloakroom. There he had only to be a plutocrat again, a plutocrat called away suddenly on business. He had only to give his ticket to the cloakroom attendant and go out again elegantly as he had come in. Only I happened to be the cloakroom attendant.
What did you do to him? What did he tell you?
I beg your pardon. Now that is where the story ends.
I think I understand his professional trick, but I don't seem to have got hold of yours.
Well, I must be going.
I'll come along with you so far.
Come along, Colonel. I've been looking for you everywhere. The dinner's going again in spanking style, and old Audley's got to make a speech in honour of the forks being saved. We want to start some new ceremony, don't you know, to commemorate the occasion. I say, you really got the goods back for us. What do you suggest?
Well, Duke, I should suggest that henceforth we wear green coats instead of black. One never knows what mistakes may arise when one looks so much like a waiter.
Hang it all, Colonel. A gentleman never looks like a waiter.
Nor a waiter like a gentleman, I suppose. Reverend sir, your friend must have been very smart to act the gentleman.
Yes, it must be very hard work to be a gentleman. But do you know, I have sometimes thought it may be almost as laborious to be a waiter. Good evening to you both. No, don't bother. I'll see myself out. Thank you.
And with that, my friend Father Brown buttoned up his commonplace overcoat, took his commonplace umbrella from the stand, and pushed open the heavy doors of that palace of pleasure. The golden gates closed behind him, and he went at a brisk walk through the damp, dark streets in search of a penny omnibus.
That was The Queer Feet by G.K. Chesterton, adapted for radio by Archie Campbell. You heard Leslie French as Father Brown, William Rushton as G.K. Chesterton, and Francis DeWolf as Flambeau. Mr. Lever was played by Harry Hankin, the Duke of Chester by Nigel Lambert, Colonel Proud by Timothy Bateson, Mr. Audley by Manning Wilson, William by Alan Rowe, the French chef by Hugh Ross, his apprentice by David Timpson, and the maître d'hôtel by Leslie Heritage. Other parts were played by members of the cast. Production was by Christopher Venning.